Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Benjamin Seschel. How are you, Benjamin?
Hi, Chris. I'm very well. Thank you very much.
We interviewed you last week. We're in Margaux at the moment, and I've just been out in your vineyard having a look around. We did a big tour of the facilities as well, your winery. Wanted to cover or process of winemaking, if we can today, that'd be fantastic. So, okay, so you bring the grapes in. You mentioned that you do some selection. What are you selecting out there? You said you're going to remove some of the stems, maybe.
Oh, if there is, and there is every year, a grape selection to do. And that we do by hand on the vines before picking. We'll have a team going through the vines from July to mid-September. And the last step will be making sure that all the grapes which are going to be picked are good to pick. Mm-hmm. So if there are either unripened grapes or rotten grapes, those will be taken off before either the pickers go in the vines or the machine.
Yep.
So all grape selection is done on the vines before picking. Then when the grapes come in the cellars here, we have to separate the stems to the grape, and that will be done partly mechanically and finished by hand on the table, sorting table by hand.
Yep, you've done the destemming, so the next step must be crushing.
Then it'll be crushing just before the grapes fall in the vats. Mm-hmm. The crusher will be put just on top of the vat, which will be two little wheels that we leave a little gap just for the grape to be, for that crushing. We don't want to damage too much the skin.
Yep.
It's just to pinch the skin.
So that it goes
to pop. Exactly. Just to get the juice out of it.
Because you don't want those bitter pips.
We don't want to hit the pips, and we want to be as gentle as possible on the skins until the fermentations, and later on even until the pressing. And the crushing is just to get the juice out of the berry, so we have in the vat the skins macerating in the juice.
Do you leave the juice in contact with the skins for a cold maceration for any length of time?
We don't do that. But it is a technique used in some areas, not so much. Well, we don't use it here at Angoudet. For me, that technique is more to get some specific aromas before fermentation.
Okay.
But it's good for the wines which are made to be drunk in young wines.
Yep.
But for these wines which have that potential of aging and developing complexity, which are going to be drunk in between 10 and 30 years' time, not what I'm looking for. And a lot more looking for the balance that will be, and more working on the structure of the wine than just specific aromas.
Do you do any adjustments here, for example, chaptalization or acidification?
Well, no. The last time we did chaptalize here at Angoudet was 1996.
Okay, quite a while ago. Bordeaux's had a good run of weather, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, but it's also, it's not only global warming, but it's mainly all that change, all the work which is done in the vines, because we see even in years where we have a lot of rain, we still end up with enough sugar in the grapes to get close to 13% alcohol in the vines, and we don't need to chaptalize anymore.
Have you seen the alcohol levels creeping up? A lot of people talk about global warming or better viticultural practices.
Yes.
Bordeaux used to be a 12% alcohol wine. Now it's
exactly
more 13.
Yeah. That shows how much we're having different grapes today than we used to 20 or 30 years ago. And to have those 12 or 12.5% alcohol in the vines, we needed to add to chaptalize at least, not probably the Merlot, but at least all the Cabernet Sauvignon. And today we're having 13 and 13.5s without chaptalization. So that does show that we're picking different grapes today as we used to do. And it's what we said, it's certainly, probably part of the global warming, but a lot is viticulture.
Yeah, better vineyard practices.
Yeah.
Maybe. Next step, obviously, alcoholic fermentation.
So after that, yeah, alcoholic fermentation will...
What sort of tanks do you use? Do you use stainless steel tanks or...?
So we're all in concrete tanks lined inside with epoxy resin, and all the vats are individually temperature controlled. In fact, yes, we're very pleased with our concrete vats. The cellar we're using today has been renovated in 15 years ago. And before doing so, we were going to build a new cellar, which would have been stainless steel and more modern style. But question came up, it was, do we really want to get rid of our concrete vats? And the answer was, probably not, or why? And we didn't find real reasons for that. And in fact, they're very good for the vinification we like to do here, because concrete, well, first, in terms of temperature, it's easy to get a nice, even temperature in the whole vat during the alcoholic fermentation. Also, the size and the shape of the vats are very good. They are wider than they are high, so we have a good skin contact during the maceration, and so we decided to keep our concrete vats.
The vats are quite squat, which means you've got a very large surface area the skin mass.
Yeah.
So that even if you're not punching down or pumping over or whatever you're doing, talk about that in a minute, you've always got a little bit more wine touching the bottom of the skins as it floats on the top.
Yeah, having a large surface of contact makes that the maceration after the alcoholic fermentation, where we don't touch, no pumping over, we just leave the skins, it sinks down. Doesn't the skins, well, partly, yeah, some of the skins do go down in the wine with a good maceration, and then we really want to taste every day the vat to decide of the right time to stop the maceration, and we don't want no pumping over, nothing. We just want to see how things are coming up, and it needs to happen slowly for us to be able to know when is the right moment to stop the maceration.
So do you not do any punching down or pumping over, rack and return, or even sometimes some places got rotary fermentation where they actually the whole barrel rotates, giving lots of good skin contact. You don't use any of that sort of technique?
No, we do very light pumping over, alcoholic fermentation.
Yep.
And it's very light. And that has changed. I remember when... in the early 90s, we were doing a lot more pumping over than we are today. But also, as we said, we had different grapes. The grapes were different. Mm. Today, we have probably more potential in the grape. And I would say more potential as average. Because, of course, in big years, potential was there even in the old days. But in average, we have more potential in the grapes. And so, and we want to be as accurate as possible in that extraction. I'm mainly thinking of the Petit Verde, which as we have a high percentage, we're really looking for in the Petit Verde parts of its structure, but we don't want everything out of the Petit Verde, because what we're really interested in the Petit Verde is the depth it has in its structure. Well, it has a lot of color, a nice spicy aromas, but it's more in the depth and the density of the structure that it has naturally. What we don't want too much out of the Petit Verde is it's a kind of heavy tannins, and it can have rustic tannins that, of course, we don't want, because it would disturb all the elegance that we're trying to build up in our blends. So we have to be very light in the pumping over to make the extraction happen very slowly and to be able to stop at the right moment. And that's why no punching, no big pumping over. It's very, very light pumping over. We sometimes stop the pumping over on the Petit Verde at mid-fermentation because we think we have enough. And so it's very important on the Petit Verde, but we also use that accuracy on the Merlot and the Cabernet Sauvignon in difficult years when we want to be have the accuracy in the three varieties to get what we want out of the skin and leave what we don't want.
What temperature do you ferment at?
We start fermenting at around 25 degrees. Then we let the temperature to rise up slowly, or help it to rise up slowly and reach a peak of 32. And I like that peak to be reached at about mid-fermentation. And then we get the temperatures down to 28, back to 28 for the end of the fermentation to slow down the extraction at the end.
Yeah, because the extraction from the skins, the tannins, they increase with temperature, and they also increase with alcohol levels in the wine, don't they? So if you've got high temperatures and high alcohols, you're going to get a lot of extraction.
Well, yes. At one stage, the alcohol will block some tannin extractions.
Oh, I thought alcohol was like a solvent and it increased extraction.
It's some elements are more extracted at low alcohol levels and then are high alcohol. But temperature has a very important effect, and the pumping over, yeah.
Do you do rack and return to get rid of any of the solid matter, or how do you the wine's getting near finish, I presume, and you've got rid of all the tannins and colour you want to extract out of the skins. Do you rack and return to remove some of that gross matter, or do you just at the end of the fermentation you just drain everything off into clean tanks?
Alcoholic fermentation will last for about 8 days, roughly. And that's where we do the amount of extraction we want to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, the alcoholic fermentation. But in terms of extraction, that is, it's done at that period. Then after that, we'll leave the wine, the skins, macerating in the wine for another 2 to 3 weeks. And there it's a static maceration, no pumping over, just the skins sitting in the wine. Because then it's what is happening through that period is more chemical. I mean, I wouldn't have the English term, but it's tannins, polymerisation de tannin. It's tannins combining to each other.
Oh, polymerization.
Polymerization, yeah. Which
softens the tannins, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, softens the tannins. And that's what we'll be checking by tasting every day to decide of when we want to stop the maceration, yeah.
Okay, all right, so you leave them in contact. Do you add any sulfur dioxide to make sure the yeast is all dead at that point, or do you use sulfur dioxide at all to kill off the yeast?
We do, yeah. We'll be using it before alcoholic fermentation, while the to protect the juice from oxidation and also to prevent microorganisms from developing in the juice, mm-hmm. until the yeast have been developing and then are protecting all the juice, and the carbonic dioxide, which will protect the juice from oxidation. So we will, yeah, and since that time, we will be using sulfur dioxide through all the process. And so after alcoholic fermentation, directly after that, we won't add sulfur dioxide, because then we have the second fermentation to happen, malolactic fermentation.
Yeah, and sulfur dioxide stops malolactic fermentation.
Yeah, the sulfur malolactic fermentation is done by bacteria, which are more sensitive to sulfur dioxide than yeasts. So we have to be careful not to add any until the malolactic is over.
Do you press? When do you press? Do you press before malolactic?
Yeah, pressing will come up after that time of maceration. When we decide of we have enough in the wine, we want to stop the maceration, we'll take the wine out of the vat, put it into another vat, press the skins. We will get in the vat and shoveling the skins and to get the press wines.
Yep. So you press it out, and then do you re-blend that back in? Or
so at that stage, it is important to keep all the different lots of wine separately. So we'll have at that stage, we'll have, of course, all the different varieties and different quality in each varieties, which will be kept separately, and of course, the press wines also. They'll be put in, after malolactic, which will take us up to the period of about mid-November. Mid-November or end of November, we should be over with all the malolactic fermentations.
And everything does 100% malolactic fermentation?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. All the wines do the malolactics. They all happen in vats, mm-hmm. except for Petit Verdot, which happens in barrels.
Oh, okay. Why Petit Verdot?
Yeah, the reason why is that Petit Verdot is... needs that micro oxygenation, which is happening through the barrel as soon as possible, and so we want to put it as soon as the maceration is over. We want to put it in barrels.
Yep.
So it malolactic happens in barrels. It suits the Petit Verdot very well.
Okay. So at the end of malolactic fermentation, you've basically got your wine ready, haven't you? But obviously, Bordeaux is famous for barrels.
You know,
barrel aging and adding flavors through the barrels, the flavors are what Bordeaux is. I think that's what Bordeaux does brilliantly.
The success of barrel aging comes from the wine and the barrel. And mm-hmm. in fact, it's the combination of adapting the quality of the barrel to the wine. Some wines don't need, or at my sense, mustn't go through barrels because they don't have the potential and the capacity for that.
Yeah.
The purpose of barrel aging is really to help the wine to gain a bigger dimension by gaining more complexity in the structure, helping the structure of the grape, of the wine, to develop and gain in complexity. Then the combination with the micro-oxygenation of the wine, which is given by through the barrel, and the exchange, wooden wine, all that should make the wine to gain a bigger dimension, but never covering the wine. If it's not done properly, if it's the quality of the barrel isn't adapted to the wine, it can go over the wine, and it can get all its character covered. And that's a balance we have to be careful in the barrel aging.
In Bordeaux, they often use small oak barrels. They're barriques, aren't they? Because they've got lots of surface area, so you get lots of flavor characteristics from the wines, from the barrels going into the wine. What sort of flavors do you expect to get from barrels?
I'm not looking off specific aromas out of a barrel. I don't want the barrel to add a flavor to the wine. When I'm saying adapting the quality of the barrel to the wine, you have to get the right barrel. So having the right barrel comes from the different oak we can use, the different how the oak has been matured,
seasoned,
the toasting of the barrel. So we're talking about different origins of oak, but today I am more selecting by the cooper. Mm-hmm. Because what makes the quality of the barrel is all those steps when they make the barrel, which has an effect on the final result. Mm-hmm. And so that makes that each cooper have a certain character and gives a certain print to the wine. And that print needs to fit our wine.
Yep.
I think there are there used to be around 400 coopers in France.
Yep.
And I could ask the same characteristics of the barrel at 10 different coopers. I would have 10 different prints at the end because of that characteristic of the cooper. When I see that very clearly, when we try a new cooper, he'll come up here at Angoudet, ask me to... Well, if we're interested in trying his barrels. So we'll probably try two barrels. After the year of barrel aging, I will quickly see if that suits me or not. And if it doesn't, I'll tell the cooper, I'm sorry, but we'll stop there. It doesn't suit what we're looking for. And he will tell me that, we can make the barrel you want.
Yeah.
We have access to all the different origins of oak in the world.
Yep.
We can do the toasting as you like. We can make the barrel you want. And by experience now, I know that, of course, they can play with all those different levels. But by experience, I see that they do have a lot of difficulties to get out of what they are, which is normal because all their organization has an effect. It's like their terroir. all that organization has an effect on the final result.
Yep.
And so it's more, the cooper, which is suiting the wine or giving the print we want to the wine.
Okay. Normally, barrels can give things like vanilla or toastiness and smokiness to the barrels.
Yeah.
But you're right. You don't always notice that in Bordeaux wine. Sometimes you do. But if you get a wine from, say, Rioja or California,
yeah,
you often see those flavors coming through more pronounced in the wine. Whereas in Bordeaux, it always seems to be less.
Yeah. Because we're more helping the wine to gain. It needs to integrate the wine. And if it covers by either by the tannins of the wood, which are overpowering the wine, or overpowering the wine by aromas, I just think it's too much for the wine. And we are promoting all our terroir expression and the capacity of our terroir here to develop a certain personality of the wine and developing complexity and finesse. And we want that identity to keep on. And the wood can help that wine to go that way, but it can also cut it down if it overpowers by overpowering by vanilla or coffee or whatever. It can be too much on the wine.
Okay. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Benjamin. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Chris, and thank you very much.
Cheers, bud.